Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Level 7.
RandomChatter.com presents
the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
Do you copy?
Perimeter breach.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case files.
Authorizing.
Just call us S.H.I.E.L.D.
Access granted.
Coulson, get back to base.
Welcome back, agents. I trust you've all been suitably briefed on the most recent encounter. We'll be your hosts on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. I'm Director Shepard.
Urgent message from Director Stolte.
Have infiltrated Hydra. Stop. Gained access to hidden files on Whitehall's computer. Stop. They know I'm here. Stop. Not much time. Stop. Discovered a mole in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. case files. Stop. Use extreme caution. Stop. Goes by codename Smorgeek. Stop. I have to stop. Stop. I need immediate extraction. Stop. Someone...
Okay. That's, interesting. Well... I'll have this sent down later, to be analyzed. But anyway, for today, let me just introduce our special guest host. We've got Special Agent Luby from Smorgeeks here. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure to be reporting for duty. It seems like there's a need, and all of us agents at S.H.I.E.L.D. are here to rise to the occasion. So I'm here, and let's do this.
That's great. And you and all of the listeners out there have been authorized to undergo debriefing on the most recent mission from Agent Coulson and his operatives presented to the public as a dramatic hour-long television series known as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Fortunately, you are all cleared to know the truth. And, sounds like we've got a mole, but I guess, that's cool. I'll have that analyzed later.
Yeah.
We'll take care of it after the show. So
should definitely.
But I'm glad you could stop by.
Yeah, it is my pleasure. In this episode, we'll be covering episode number 5 of season 2, Hen in the Wolf House, which aired October 21st, 2014, written by Brent Fletcher, directed by Holly Dale. In this episode, Daniel Whitehall would very much like to weaponize the power of the mysterious obelisk. And who better to help than Agent Simmons? She sends a secret warning message to Coulson, but there's no hiding from the eyes of Hydra. Hail Hydra!
What was that?
Nothing. So now the bad guys have a very tall, very tough, very intimidating Bobby Morse, who's investigating the mole in their midst. It seems like Simmons may actually get away with it until Raina, the girl in the flower dress, goes to Coulson with a proposition. She wants the obelisk for her enigmatic friend, the Doctor, and in turn won't betray Simmons to Hydra. Coulson refuses, much to Skye's dismay, when she finds out that this doctor could be her father. But Simmons is saved by the ultimate mole when she realizes that Bobby, Mockingbird Morse, is on her side. The good guys win the day, but the doctor pays a visit to Whitehall with a shiny gift for him.
This episode... I've enjoyed all the episodes this season. I think they're on a really good track, but this was just so chock full of stuff. I don't want to say we got answers necessarily, but we got a lot of fodder to discuss many different facets of where the characters are going and mythological things that are happening in the series.
It's one of those episodes where you definitely saw progression in the story and characters. You got, you have a bunch of questions going into a new season of a show. And this one, it gets to the point of like almost answering it. Almost here is an answer. Here's some clarification on maybe some speculation you've had.
Yes.
But now wait, here are more questions. And that's what's exciting about the show is that it's not just stringing you along with, trying to make you wait till the end of a season to answer everything. It's keeping you there, but it's giving you more stuff to think about. So we've got a lot to talk about.
And we do, and we will talk about that. But let me just give a quick bit of news here. There was supposedly a special – well, not supposedly, but there was a special announcement to be made at the end of this week's S.H.I.E.L.D. And that special announcement was that next week after Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or possibly – within it. I don't remember exactly how it was phrased. I'm guessing at the end because they're going to want to make you watch
that,
the whole
show. Yeah, in that last 15 minutes when Nielsen is counting the – because it does it – Nielsen does ratings in 15-minute chunks. So
okay.
It'll be that last 15 minutes for sure.
Yeah, there will be a preview for the Avengers Age of Ultron.
Yes.
For the trailer, I guess. No, I'm thinking it's going to be a teaser for the trailer, not the actual trailer. But who knows? They might be showing the trailer.
Yeah. If you're real keen on finding it, it's made some. I think Hydra has had its hands in it because it's out there.
Yeah, as we record this, it seems like it has just leaked, and I may or may not have seen it already, and I may or may not have enjoyed it. So
We'll have to wait till the next episode, and tune in for that. I'm sure, right?
When Josh is back next week, we will discuss that a little bit and what it might mean for the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But he's out on field assignment this week, so Chris, we're going to be talking about Hen in the Wolf House, the like you said, the fifth episode of the second season. You were last on our fourth episode of the first season, and it's great to have you back to talk about the things. Well, just it's great to have you back. Period.
Well, thank you.
But the stuff that we're talking about here, there's a lot of interesting things that are going on with this alien writing. And the obelisk, which is new for this season, but some of these character developments, and they were first introduced in I Spy, which was the last episode you were on, and we had a lot of speculation about what the writing was and who the bad guys were, and it's interesting how it's all, you know, coming around to stuff that we talked about, and it's like, well, we weren't too far off.
Yeah, exactly. I remember when we had Ward going into, what was it, Bosnia? Is that where
Belarus?
Belarus, and he walks in, and there's that weird writing. We're like, "That's going to come back. That's important."
Oh, yeah. very important stuff.
And now it's like one of the central focuses of the season so far.
And I'm glad they're like you said, they're not necessarily answering things, but they're clarifying. They're giving us a little bit more explanation on certain things. The main focus, I think, was on – well, one of the main focuses was on Skye. She has been a mysterious character. We've been given little bits and nuggets of information about her history since last season. The fact that she was an 084, she was saved from the Hunan province in China by a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent who later was killed, and then there's another S.H.I.E.L.D. agent that was being hunted by something, and they mentioned it in, I believe it was Agent Lumley they were talking about in this episode, that he would say that wherever Skye goes, death follows, which was an interesting quote that they brought up again in here. And we find out a lot more about her in this particular episode. They actually go so far as to say that she may be an alien. I was kind of surprised that that Coulson was so blunt, or that the writers were just like, all right, we're just going to set this out there.
Sure.
Is that still a prevailing theory that you follow?
You know, I have a couple of thoughts on what's going on with Skye, and they do tie in a little bit with Reyna as well. These are my own theories. I'm not harvesting them, from what, I guess what everybody might be thinking. Cause I feel like I watch these a bit of in a vacuum. And I like, that's the way I like it. I like to form my own opinions, you know?
Oh yeah. That's always nice.
You know, exactly. So, I feel like it's, you pointed out that you're saying like the writers are throwing it out there, to make the audience at least have that question in the back of their mind: is Skye an alien, or is she of an unknown origin, like that? And she was classified; she was an 084. So one of the questions you have to ask is, well, what is her deal? What is the mystery? You know, they need to keep bringing that up so we don't forget that, mm-hmm. You know, as an audience that might just be joining us, you know, for the second season and not aware of that's a question you should always be asking yourself.
Exactly.
I think there's definitely something big. I don't know if this isn't maybe the time to bring it up, but one of the things that, you know, I've been following when it comes to, you know, what Marvel, the Disney, you know, the Marvel Studios is able to bring up, and was told as a kid, you know, that there's some stuff that we learn about her as well. I don't know if she's an alien. I don't know if that's misdirection by the writers to make us want to be thinking in that direction so that they can surprise us later. I don't know. But I do like feeling like I know more about Sky when really I don't.
Yeah, that is a good way to put it, that it seems like they've given us a little more information, but have they really? It's interesting that you bring up Raina because this thought had never occurred to me. You know, I mean, we talk about Raina and we talk about Sky, and Josh and I have talked about Raina's interest in what does she call it? It's the evolution of characters that, you know, that Sky would change or that Coulson would change or things like that. Just the powers that might be coming from characters or the fact that they change. And it's something that hadn't occurred to me until now, but there may be some relationship, familial or otherwise, between Raina and Sky.
Sure.
And I don't think we've gotten into discussing that on the show before. Do you think there's a case to be made for that?
The only reason why I think that there is something is that I'm not able to bring up an exact reference to this moment, but I know that, you know, especially early in the last, you know, midway through the last season, Raina talks about how, you know, she grew up with this idea that she was something more, that there mm-hmm. was, that she had this, some, you know, there was something else about her, which, you know, obviously is something, you know, for a TV show and for a character for us to still be, you know, invested in finding more about her. The other thing is, you know, Sky being, you know, picked up in China. And then Raina wears very Asian inspired outfits as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And, you know, I don't know if that is to, you know, as a visual connection between those two characters that is yet really to be overtly pointed out. But I feel like there's definitely a connection between them, and there's definitely a reason why she wears a flower dress. Like, there's definitely that something that has yet to be, or at least to my viewing and understanding, that there's a reason why she always wears them. There is a reason why there is a connection that is yet to be made or has been made and we've missed it or I've missed it. But there's something about that.
Yeah, I mean, other than the fact that she happens to like flower dresses and is always wearing them, and it's a great character thing because you can always just refer to the girl with a flower dress and everybody's like, oh, yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about, you know, as opposed to saying Raina and people are like, oh, yeah, who's mm-hmm. that again? It was like Hunter saying, this is the fuss about the girl in the flower dress. You know, it's like, because she doesn't look like much.
Right.
But she does bring she does throw a lot of weight around when it comes to dealing with our characters. Last year, when she was working with the Project Centipede folks, to when she was working with Garrett, to this season where she seemed to be freelance and not working for Hydra anymore, working with the Doctor, who it appears that she's always been with the Doctor, or you know, there at some point. You know, it's kind of a
the association's master. Been there. It
yeah,
seems like. There,
I feel like he took her under his wing. Like, he lost his daughter, and then he found her at some point because there's mention of her grandmother telling her stories as a teenager. I want to if it wasn't said implicitly, it was implied that he picked her up when she was a teenager or close thereafter, I think, and has kind of been taking care of her or mentoring her or something like that, because obviously he taught her to be able to handle the obelisk.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it may not be something that you pick up off the bat. It also might be that
it's obviously not, because we've seen what can happen to people who
exactly just touch it barely.
Yeah, exactly.
It may also, I mean, this is way speculation, but you know that it's implied that the doctor, whether or not it's Skye's father or whatever, has been looking for Skye. And maybe
this
that trail,
time, yeah.
Yeah, maybe the things that he's looking for led him to her. You know,
To Raina.
You know, to Raina, right. That maybe he knows something specific to be looking for, and one of those, you know, that trait or whatever is, and again, I'm chasing down this trail connecting these two, and there's really nothing out there that overtly says this, but that's just something that was on my mind in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we do, though. I mean, it's just the way that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. does their shows is such a way that we can't really point to a specific storyline from the Marvel Universe of comics that has told the story in some fashion. And so we can say, well, you know, it's probably this, or, you know, it's like we do with like The Flash or Arrow or some other shows, Gotham and things like that. So it's, you know, that's all we can do really is speculate about these sort of things. So now Skye knows that her father is out there. So the questions that always pop up into my head ever since the kind of the big reveal at the end of season one is, are the characters really telling the truth about anything? I feel like my trust has been eroded in certain characters. Like, I didn't trust Simmons for a while, and then, you know, she was working with Hydra, and you're like, okay, she's undercover. Well, right. Is she really undercover? Is she a triple agent? You know? And so I feel like I'm always second guessing myself with this show, which is probably a disservice, because I think the writers are being forthright 90% of the time. I think they're only trying to hide things when it looks like they're trying to hide things, you know, but, so let's assume that this in fact is actually her father. Kyle MacLachlan, the doctor, is her father. So she now knows her father's out there. She's got a picture of him because there was that framed photo of him with what appeared to be a baby.
Sure.
But
could be any baby. I mean, if we're to question it, then, I mean, that photo isn't necessarily proof. But it definitely, I mean, we're, like you said, I don't feel like the writers are specifically hiding stuff. I mean, granted, they want us to keep, you know, it actively involved, and we, but Ward, I mean, that kind of came out of seemingly nowhere, you know, last season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, it's in, you know, the Whedon versus, you know, like Will to throw a complete twist at us to keep us on our toes, which I like. I like, you know, when Simmons showed up at Hydra, I was like, wait, what? Like, I genuinely was wondering what was really going on. I didn't immediately think, oh, she's undercover.
Oh, you didn't?
Not immediately. It took a little bit, you know, like, I wasn't 100% sold. Like, I mean, and so well done to them.
Yeah.
For leading me on. I was not 100% like, oh, she's undercover.
That is a great, I mean, I thought that was a great twist. Unfortunately, I think the fact that they used it as their little teaser episode on the web for that episode, it kind of spoiled it for me a little bit, I think. You can go back and listen to that episode if you want to find out about that. Anyway, so Skye has got this information about her father, and not a lot, but enough to know that he is a monster. As has been mentioned before, I believe it was in the same episode when May and Coulson found this Agent Lumley, who was the one surviving member of the team that was at this Hunan province when Skye was rescued. He said that monsters attacked and slaughtered everybody. Now, I believe he used the plural, and so we're not, you know, it could have been the father plus other people. It could have just been the other characters. It could have just been the father, because obviously he appears to have some sort of great strength for being able to fight with people.
Sure. That there's something. Yeah, there's definitely something going on. I was like, are they trying to do like a weird Bruce Banner moment here with this guy? Like,
you right. know, where he's I couldn't tell if he was starting to change. Like if because he looked at himself when he was strangling Rain at the beginning. He was, I think it was looking in a mirror, or maybe it was like a
wasn't it the photo? Metal. I feel like it was. He looked at the photo.
Oh, was it? Oh, maybe it was his reflection in the photo. It was yeah. hard to tell because there was too much out of focus. I was having trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought maybe it was a paper towel dispenser kind of thing on the wall.
See, I guess I'd have to go back now, but I'm pretty sure it was he was looking at himself in the reflection of a photo of himself as a younger person. So it was almost like, you know, he's looking at his older self and his new, you know, his current self being reflected, you know, in
you know, that would make sense why the photo's on the floor. The right. fact that he had such a violent reaction to it, because obviously it would be dredging up a lot of painful memories for him.
Right.
So that's interesting. Yeah, I'll go back and check that out as well. But that makes sense. I like that explanation there. So Skye has this information. She's been interested to find out more about her family. Up to this point, she hasn't been sure if Ward has been telling her the truth. But now I think she kind of realizes that, yes, he is telling the truth. So I think there's I think there's going to be that level of trust that, you know, Ward has ingratiated himself into her, which could be good. It could be bad.
Sure.
We don't, you know, because we don't know really what his objective is at this point. Is it just to, all right, he's resigned to living in the cell the rest of his life? Or, I mean, I would assume he wants to get out in some fashion. But she seems to be set to, like, okay, no, I made a decision. We're going to go after this guy. You know, we're going to take him down. I don't care if he's my dad. This is horrible. It seems like she's really jumping to conclusions there. I'm not sure what else to make out of that, because obviously it's a lot more complicated than what we're seeing here in the last, whatever, it's the last 5 minutes of the episode.
Yeah. And it's in a lot of ways, it's Skye realizing people are shutting me out. They're not including me in stuff. Coulson, who used to be a father figure who was bringing her along. And now she's like, look, it seemed like, at least the way it played out in the final scene, that she went out on her own. And, mm-hmm. you know, and so she was like, look, no one's going to help me with this. I'm just going to take care of this myself, because
right.
I'm being separated and excluded from the group.
Her trust since last season has really been eroded in all sorts of characters. And it seems like she was gaining that back a little bit, but she has been chafing against Coulson all season because he's been compartmentalizing. And it seems like we've kind of broken through that a little bit, where he, you know, it's like he's like, all right, I'll trust you a little bit more. And like, here's all this crazy alien writing and stuff that I've done. And he gives us a little bit more confirmation that Josh and I have been talking about. Why does it have to be carved? Like, why can't they just be writing it on a piece of paper? And you know, I mean, I think this is the best explanation we'll get. He just feels, he says he's compelled to carve it. Like it just has to come out. It's not, you know, anything that's conscious. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like diarrhea, I guess. He just has to regurgitate it out.
Yeah, you've got to let it just flow.
Yeah.
This is a big moment. This is a big episode for Skye. But it's also, you know, this was I want to talk about that alien writing. I've got some thoughts on that. But Skye, not only was it a big episode for her, but it was also a big episode for Simmons and Hydra as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the relationship of Simmons as a plant in Hydra's organization here kind of came to a head. Here's the question I want to ask. So, first off, it's great to see Simmons back again, second week in a row. Not that we haven't seen her in any of the episodes, but I really am drawing a line and saying, there's the Simmons that is Fitz's Simmons, where it's Elizabeth Henstridge, but she is acting the way Fitz right. remembers her.
His subconscious is projecting her. That's
right.
That's the version we've seen on screen in those first couple episodes before Simmons was revealed as working undercover.
Right. And then, but now, like, we're actually back with Simmons, and she actually comes back to the team in this one. So she's, you know, undercover. She seems to be doing pretty well, but it appears that she's going to be made as a mole by this female head of security who, if we were watching this episode cold, we might not realize who that character is because she is not introduced. She just kind of comes in barking orders at people. But the internet being what it is and Comic-Con and all this kind of stuff, we knew that Adrian Palicki was going to be joining the show as a character called Mockingbird, a.k.a. Bobby Morse or Barbara Morse. And my question to you is, when she came in to the scene, were you surprised? Were you like, oh, no, like she's working for Hydra or?
That's a great question.
What did you believe?
I'm going to feel a little bit like a dumb comic book reader, but was not familiar with Mockingbird. Okay. I knew that's who she was playing. I knew Wonder Woman was going to be playing Mockingbird. I was like, okay, right. This Adrian Palicki is going to be playing Mockingbird. That's great. That's cool. I don't know anything about you. I honestly wasn't compelled to do any research because I'd rather the show kind of tell the story because it's always going to be a little different than what I find in the comic books. And I thought, okay, maybe she's, you know, when she showed up on screen, I was like, oh, Mockingbird's a bad guy. Okay. Like, just kind of went with
sure.
it. She was very convincing. She had authority. She didn't need an introduction. She marches in with a bunch of Hydra soldiers behind her. And that kind of tells me and the audience that she's with them and she's a bad guy and is obviously paid her dues in the organization to have earned that level of respect. So
right. So yeah, you know, unfortunately, I mean, I've got the back story that I know who Mockingbird is, who Bobby Morse is, and kind of her history. She in the comic book, she's been a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. She's also a superhero. She was engaged and married to Hawkeye at one point. Interestingly enough, though, she was married to Lance Hunter in this iteration of the story,
right.
Which I thought was some of the best. I'm loving Nick Blood's portrayal of Lance Hunter more and more every episode.
I agree. I mean, obviously, they couldn't tie in the Hawkeye storyline because he's otherwise busy.
Right.
But
he's scamming on Black Widow, man.
Yeah, exactly. I could, you know, it was after the show that I was like, okay, let me look up Mockingbird. Let me look a little bit more about her history. And I was like, oh, Hawkeye. Like, it's interesting that they were able to keep theirs, you know, to have, you know, the, you know, relationship thing, you know, where it's like where they used to be married and, you know, the banter between them was awesome. I feel like that was, you know, I'm not 100% on the Mockingbird fan bandwagon at the moment, but that was some of my favorite of hers, at least, you know, when it comes to the writing and her acting. So,
yeah. So I had, you know, backstory going in, and as soon as I see her, it's like, well, I mean, she's been an Avenger in the comic books. It's like, this is clearly a good character, and unfortunately, to me, it was not really a surprise. It's like, okay, so she's undercover as well. I mean, that was literally my first thoughts when I saw the promo photo of her as the head of Hydra Security, I don't know, like 3 weeks ago or something like that.
Right.
And, you know, it kind of confirmed it out in this episode that, you know, Coulson's there and he's letting the timer tick down and everyone's like, Coulson has a plan. And, you know, it was tense because I'm like, okay, he's just going to stop it at the last minute, or it's a bluff that Reyna is calling and it's not actually going to send the picture out. And then it sends this picture out and I'm like, okay, so obviously I think this is where Bobby's going to come in and save everybody or save Simmons, which is what happened. But what's interesting about this whole thing is I'm wondering, so for you, it was you took Bobby's role on faith when they introduced her to you,
right.
And then her switch to being an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. that is now a new member of the team, that was the surprise for you.
That was, yeah.
Right. And I think that will work for, you know, for people that, like you said, like you, that just, you know, didn't do the research and don't have a backstory with her.
Right, exactly. And I don't think that the majority, I mean, that's a character that is not, you know, a common, you know, household name. character that, yeah, comic book fans will know, and people who have read Avengers. I for one was more into X-Men and Batman as a kid, so the those a lot of Avengers storyline stuff, especially older ones, I'm really unfamiliar with. So her walking on screen, I was like, oh okay, she's Hydra. Maybe she has a shield pass, but so does most of Hydra. And was like, she's a badass. Like, okay, like, I'll just, she's the lady in charge, and I'm afraid of her. And it didn't click with me when, it was obvious that Coulson had a plan when it came to the ticking clock. But I thought, like you just said, it was more of a bluff that I was like, how does Raina know Hydra's email addresses? And then when she started kind of freaking out when the timer got low, I was like, she's bluffing. She has nothing.
Right.
Let's not to mention the picture she had, was of, Simmons with a, fish taco wrapper.
I posted that on our Facebook page. I thought that was kind of silly. It's like, how incriminating is this?
Hydra is well known to be fish taco unfriendly. They are strictly beef and chicken only. So
yeah, that's true. Well, and who puts a dead drop right in front of the bad guy's headquarters?
Yeah,
that's the other question. Anyway, I'm glad that the Bobby Morse reveal was a surprise to you, because I'm sure that's what it was intended to be. But I feel like the writers and producers do take the show on several levels, and my question is, based on some evidence I'm about to give you here, which you may or may not have noticed. Is Bobby Morse actually brainwashed? We've seen over the last couple episodes the fact that they can actually brainwash S.H.I.E.L.D. agents to working against S.H.I.E.L.D. So Agent 33 was the one we saw on – she got brainwashed two episodes ago and then was fighting Agent May last week. We have Simmons mention when they came back to the S.H.I.E.L.D. headquarters that – it's lucky that Bobby got her out of there at the time, because otherwise she might have been forced to comply and do whatever, and she was kind of making light of that situation. I was looking at Bobby to see if there was any kind of recognition. It looks like she kind of starts to smile just right before the cut, like, oh, she thought that was like a funny joke that Simmons was telling as well. But when they're running away, Bakshi and two of the guards come down the hall, and the last thing we see is Bobby pulls out her Eskrima sticks and charges off screen towards them. And then we cut back upstairs to the roof. Simmons is looking around for her exit strategy.
There's nobody there. Exactly.
Right. And then Bobby comes running out screaming, "Southwest corner, Southwest corner," and they escape. And the next time we see Bakshi, which is presumably shortly after this, he doesn't look any worse for wear. Now, that may just be
he ran away
because of the staging or the lighting, but I'm wondering, it's like, did she really beat him up?
Sure.
I don't know.
Yeah, was it, or did he had guards with him? Did the guards engage and he took off?
Right. We just don't know. Right, because it...
We're supposed to be asking these questions, right? Because we don't see it on screen. So that's something definitely to think about. Is she controlled? Now, I do. It was Simmons, right, that mentioned comply, right?
Right. Simmons mentioned that. She used the term comply. So she knew about the brainwashing that they were doing.
I took notice of that as well. That was something that I was like, wait. Like that there's relevance to that, like whether it was a joke or whatever. Was it just, because when we saw, what was it? You say Agent 33, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So when Agent 33, like, I feel like that was, an element of the storytelling, that we didn't need it to be a brainwashed agent to fight May. That could have just been a Hydra bad guy fighting May in that earlier episode. But I feel like there may be some truth to that, because it's like, why would they need to tell us about the brainwashing? It's like it felt like that's a setup, that they're showing us what can happen to an agent so that the payoff can happen later.
Right. I mean, they showed us that there were bad guys that had this compliance put into them with Absorbing Man.
Right.
And with Frozone. No, Donnie Gill.
Mr.
But yes, exactly. That's a really good point. Why would they need to show us S.H.I.E.L.D. agent being turned to show us how this brainwashing stuff works? Because we already saw how the brainwashing mm-hmm. worked.
And why specifically a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent?
Right, right. Other than just to do a cool fight sequence, which, again, I think they're above that. And it's interesting things. And now and then I start to second guess myself, saying I'm just reading too much into this.
Right. We're chasing shadows.
Right.
Or but, are we?
Yeah, exactly. I know. It's just what's interesting about this show is that I think that people who don't know anything about it, they get, 2x twists and turns, right? Two times as many twists and turns as people who know stuff about the comics, because I feel like, aha, I know what you're doing because I know who this character is. And then, see, you were trying to trick me. And then they're going to come back later and go, aha, but we did trick you because of this.
Yeah, exactly. And they can do that because, you know, this is existing in the, you know, alternate. It doesn't, you know, the comic book stuff can come into play or it doesn't have to, because it's the cinematic universe. So they can play on comic book fans' own, you know, our knowledge of existing characters, and they can use that against us by
right.
thinking, all right, so we're going to be leading you down this path of a familiarity with this character, and we're going to capitalize on that by you doing this twist. They have that ability.
Mm-hmm. And it's stuff we talked about the last time you were on, because we were discussing all the little tidbits that they were leaving about Coulson. Did he really die? Is he an LMD? Is he a robot? Is he whatever? Because they kept leaving all these little pieces for fans to speculate on, and casual viewers might be like, okay, that's kind of weird, and I wonder what's going on with this, because this guy died in Avengers. But, you know, like you said, we were walking down the path, and it's like, okay, so here's all the speculation, and they were kind of using our knowledge against us.
Exactly. And that's smart. It's hard to tell you a story that you feel like you already know, unless you know that the audience already thinks they know this.
Right. And they know the audience.
Right.
And they know that it's a smart, I mean, they're smart, writers anyway, but they know what the audience is and everything like that. So there's some stuff going on with Bobby being on the team. I think it's going to change the dynamic, but for this particular episode, we got to hear from every character, even if it was only like one or two lines. I think, Trip had the fewest, but he still got to be in there. But I mean, we got some Mac, we got a bunch of Hunter, and we got the core team. We got Bobby. I really liked the dynamic that is set up with the team now, because we've got various interplayed relationships now between, you know, we find out after Hunter bitching about his ex for a couple episodes here, we find out who the ex is, and it's like,
yes.
That's brilliant. And they've kind of hit a critical mass with a number of characters. I know it's difficult probably for them to write for that many characters, to give them stuff to do every episode, but I felt that this episode felt like it was much more packed than previous episodes for the same amount of time.
Right. There's only so much that can actually be done when you only have a team of like five.
You know,
that you can only achieve so much. You can't put multiple characters in danger in multiple places because they're a small team. Like in earlier episodes of the first season, like they're all together in one spot. Mm-hmm. Like it's hard to break up the group and have peril. Like you couldn't have Simmons working over here and have her being held hostage, you know, to this, you know, to the photo and, you know, to, you know, all that. I think the dynamic is nice this season with the addition of the new cast members. I think that's a good change. It actually, to me, felt like the show got, like the world got bigger,
yes.
even though the world of S.H.I.E.L.D. has gotten really small, you know?
True. Well, that's always good to be able to use, your characters. This was a complaint that and complaint is probably even still too strong a word, but Josh and I had mentioned this last season, where we wanted to see more going on with other S.H.I.E.L.D. agents. And then when we finally got, like, the Hub and we got the S.H.I.E.L.D. Academy, it was good because it did, like you said, it opened up that world. And it's a problem, you know, it's a budgetary issue. It's a problem with shows when they first start off. You know, I seem to recall, like, watching Star Trek The Next Generation in the first season. Even though they were going to different planets, like, you didn't know much about the characters, and everything was as contained as it could be, you know, probably for budgetary reasons, but also everybody's getting to know who they're playing. The writers are getting to know the characters, the directors, you know, everybody's trying to figure out what is this show doing. And when you come to a second season, everybody kind of comes back after the hiatus and is like, okay, so now we're really going to get moving, and everybody's comfortable with what they're doing and are ready to, you know, tell bigger stories and just crank everything up a notch. So I think that's what we're feeling and seeing in this season and in this episode here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like you said, you're able to, with the characters, you know, in all the seasons, it's not, I never feel like when I watch an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that while they might tell a contained story, that the show is not just about here's the mystery of the week, we solve it, good deal, characters mm-hmm. stay the same. There's always been growth and change with the people and characters that they've introduced.
So speaking of growth and change, I want to talk about Fitz just a little bit because we were talking about Simmons coming back. At the end of last episode, we got Josh and I talked about Fitz coming out of his shell a little bit with the boys having a beer, right?
Mm-hmm. He's buddies with Mac, you know.
Yeah, well, he's been buddying with Mac, and then he makes that just kind of that awkward quote to Hunter about not having an ex, but you know he wanted to. There's a girl he was interested in, and then she left, and everybody's like, "Well, that's kind of awkward." But Hunter's like, "You know, well." Too bad for her, right? And so it's like, oh, you know, guys bonding. And then this episode, we don't get a lot of development with him, right? Because I think we got a bunch last week. But we do get to see him figuring out, you know, still trying to figure out what's going on, not, you know, and basically telling the imaginary Simmons in his head to shut up. And, you know, she just disappears. And when the real Simmons comes back, he's not sure what's going on. I for one, did not feel like once she came back, it was going to be magical and it was going to be just like, he'll be like, oh, he's totally fine. You know, he's having to say, are you real?
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I'm not sure she knows to what degree he's had issues. I'm not sure, like, if she's been kept in the loop on that.
I would almost assume that she wasn't, because that would distract her from her assignment. Mm-hmm. That she obviously cares a lot about Fitz, that if she knew that he was going through such the issues that he was going through, that would be a distraction for her.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
And you know, when she shows back up, you know, I didn't expect, you know, for, you know, reunited and it, you know, that, that song didn't come on. But you know, he had, you know, while he didn't get a lot of screen time on this episode, we got a lot of actual physical care, you know, his mental health was clarified, that he recognizes for the, you know, I guess the first time that mm-hmm. that Head Simmons is not really there.
Yeah.
And that he felt like the control was back. He had kind of gained some control over reality by going, you're not real. And coming to terms with that. So what I got from Simmons coming back was, oh crap, you know, am I going insane again? I thought I had this under control, you know, that he didn't go running into her arms or anything.
Right.
I was happy that didn't happen, because I was like, that's not where he is inside at this moment.
Well, and because he's gained that control, I'm worried now, because real Simmons is back, is he going to break again? Because he can't, you know, combine his mental reality, wherever that is, with what's really going on. I, you know, I don't know what they're planning to do with that, but I'm interested. It'll never be like it was before.
No.
Which is kind of a shame, but I do enjoy that the characters are growing and showing us different facets of themselves. Speaking of different facets, I want to ask you if you picked up on this. I saw a couple people posting about this on a message board because this is what jumped into my head. It is early in the episode, and as you call her, Head Simmons is there talking to him, and they're watching Sky, I believe, take the painting out of the lab.
Right.
And he's asking Head Simmons, is that really what happened? And she just goes, wow, would you look at Mac? His muscles are big. So, which is funny because, you know, it's this woman who's not paying attention to Fitz. But then you realize, wait a second, this is just a figment of his imagination. And why is the figment of his imagination focusing on Mac's muscles?
You know,
he calls out there a little bit. So
I want to err on the side of this is the, you know, the writers trying to, you know, not everybody coming in watches every episode of the show. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that's right at the beginning, like you just said, where, you know, here are two people having a conversation. Here is a woman acting like, you know, we would assume that she would, you know, have
yes.
this thought and whatever. And I feel like maybe we're reading too much into that if we're trying to say that Fitz has some deep repressed feelings that are being exposed through his Simmons in his head.
I agree with you. I mean, I think it's a funny joke, and when you take it to that level, I think you can safely say that Simmons is probably acting the way he thinks Simmons would be acting.
Exactly. I think it's both that because the Simmons that we've always seen has been very much this is the Simmons that we know, but she is also knows a little bit about Fitz's well-being and inside his brain because she is in his
right.
in his brain. I think it's both. It's Simmons acting like Simmons would act, but it's also a storytelling thing so that anybody who's just now joining Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, if this is their first episode, they get a little surprised by realizing she's not a real person.
I can't believe that people haven't been watching the series, that they're just people that are coming in and like this would be their first episode. That's just weird to think.
I know a lot. I know a good handful of people that I was like, I'm like, you watching Gotham? Oh, yeah, I love Gotham. You watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? No, I haven't seen that.
Oh. I'm like, they got misplaced priorities.
I don't know if we can be friends. I'm throwing this whole thing into question right now.
I had a coworker that he watched like the first four episodes of S.H.I.E.L.D. and then it started, you know, getting not so great. And he was like, no, I got to drop it. I'm like, you're going to be sorry. And then come the end of the season, I'm like, oh, my gosh, you got to check out what's going on. And, you know, Captain America 2 happened and he like had to binge watch to catch up so that he could watch the finale, and it's one of those things. Not every episode rewards you for being a fan, but I think there's enough stuff that goes into each of the episodes that, you know, little things like this that, I don't know. Other shows just don't do that. I mean, a lot of shows are just made for people to have on and kind of be paying attention to, but you know, it doesn't really, you don't have to pay that close attention. This show, I think you do, or at least you can get more out of it if you do pay that close attention.
You definitely get more out of it by paying closer attention to the stuff, but I think you still have, it is successful in its ability to be watched a little slightly passive, that you can watch this as a spy show with here are bad guys. Here is a sticky situation. Mm-hmm. Here are the good guys getting out of sticky situation. The end, you know, and you have a good story that's being told. But, you know, if you stick with it, there's a, you know, obviously there's the payoff. You get big moments where it ties in with the big Marvel Cinematic Universe, which everyone watches. I mean, you look at the money that's being made.
Yeah.
There's definitely a payoff. So it always bewilders me when I'm like, really, you know, this is the first episode or, you know, cause you know, they do write the show with that in mind, that there's little like recaps, you know, exposition,
I mean,
that is said by, you know, the actors, you know,
that's what comic books do. I mean, I go back and when I'm reading an arc, for comics, now this is probably more true from the 80s and before than it is of current series, because they still do the little recaps, but it would be like a third of a comic, a second issue of a comic arc or series or whatever, spends the time retelling what happened in the last one. You know, for the person that's just picking up this particular issue, so you know why the character's in the situation they're at. When you go and read it as a four-part story, it's like, boy, I'm getting a lot of repeat here. I end up skipping stuff. Whereas today, they tend to write stuff that'll be good in a graphic novel format where there's no repeat of story. Like, if you missed what happened, tough luck, man. You got to go find somewhere to get that information. But getting to one of the more rewarding, bigger story things is this alien writing. We were kind of talking about it earlier, and just in relationship to Sky and Coulson. You said there was some stuff you wanted to talk about with this. What are your thoughts about the alien writing?
Sure. So I know when we first originally saw this in the I Spy. In I Spy, we immediately came to the conclusion that, okay, it's alien. My original, you know, looking, I'm like, oh, it's like schematics.
It was like a circuit diagram, I think we had talked about.
This is some sort of weapon or communication device or whatnot. And then this episode had some things that came to mind, too, that, you know, Garrett had been writing, you know, this alien stuff. And then, you know, he gets, you know, killed by S.H.I.E.L.D. And then Coulson starts writing it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they talked about also it's written on the obelisk. It's written on the back of that painting. The thing that came to my head was that this is this important information that it's sort of like it's meant to be written until solved. And once a person that is writing it is gone, somebody else gets kind of turned on to have to continue that work. That Coulson had the alien stuff in him back when, you know, he was in Tahiti, right? Like it was in him for a long time, just like Sky has it. But she isn't writing it.
Oh, yeah.
So it was sort of like, okay, well, Garrett's, you know, communication, you know, he's compelled to write it just like Coulson is, that, well, he's gone now. So then it's like, okay, well, this thing, whatever it is, has to be continued. And now it's Coulson's turn.
Interesting. So it's kind of like the Voyager disc that is information that is being broadcast for some kind of explanation purpose. You know, the disc that went out on Voyager that tells about
Verger,
where we're from, V'ger, right?
V'ger.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that was what I got out of that, was that there's a reason why it was pointed out that, you know, Garrett did this, Coulson doing this. Sky, is this your writing? No, it's not my writing. Good, because blah, 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 blah. Like, that there was a reason for that kind of linear timeline of the writing. And then what worries me, you know, to what's going on with Sky is that she looks at it and is able to identify what it is, whether or not she's right or not. But I'm leaning on the side that she's right, that it came to her just as naturally as the writing does to Coulson.
Because she's technologically savvy. I mean, she just seems to solve things, right? I mean, we've kind of joked about her mutant ability, quote unquote, is, you know, just being able to have, you know, being able to do tech stuff, like solve stuff on computers and make things happen.
Right.
Her so, like you said, ability. The fact that she just looks at this and kind of knows what it is, it's like, that's probably what it is. And she says it's a map of some kind.
Right. And that does play into the possibility that she is, you know, the alien thing. That plays
extraterrestrial
into that possible
of some kind.
Question.
Yeah. Now, one thing that I found was very interesting, the Coulson uses the word triggered.
Yes.
Which he says, first night I saw Garrett's writings, it just triggered something in me. And that's what is, like you were saying, is that compulsion that he got to start carving this stuff. Triggering to me in the Marvel Universe, again, as a reader of the mythology of the comics, triggering is something that happens to mutants or to mutant genes. Genes get triggered. I mean, that's something that happens in real life as well.
Right.
But there is, and Josh
can't
and I
have
discussed
mutants. Can't have mutants in this universe.
Right. Yeah. They can't have the mutants because that's the term mutant is used for the X-Men universe, and that's part of Fox's purview. But as Josh and I talked about before, could it have something to do with the Inhumans and triggering the Inhuman gene is something that's, you know, that phrase that happens with this Terrigen mist that goes out and is the obelisk a Terrigen item,
maybe
made from Terrigen metal or whatever it is. Who knows?
Right.
I mean, that's something else. We did get more information, though, that the obelisk is something that's known as the diviner in its language that that Sky's dad seems to, know about it, the object and its history in some fashion. Diviner, as a definition, just for those of you that don't know, comes out as a person who uses special powers to predict future events.
Hmm.
So, it's also in terms of a divining rod. People called dowsers use divining rods to supposedly find water. It's a stick that they hold that, will point to water when they get near it. So maybe the obelisk is a tool that is used by an individual to find people that are worthy or that have a specific
or just the map, the obelisk, the diviner has the writings on it too. Now we know it's a map. Is it to be used in conjunction? We see Reyna
like a Ouija board previous, or something.
That she's able to use it, and is it something that Sky immediately has a familiarity with? This is really the first time she really got a good chance to look at the writing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when she got a good look at it, she's like, it's a map.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens if she comes in contact with the obelisk. Is she able to touch it, which may or may not be, capable of for her, but in conjunction with the writing, what can she, divine from that?
Right.
So, interesting.
More questions,
Yeah, but like you said at the beginning of the episode, it's enough that it's clarification for us where, we've got so many crazy theories, but they're not proving nor disproving anything. But this, they were able to kind of say, okay, just by, obviously the writers just don't pick words to use at random. Right. They're choosing the words to use. So by, listening to the words that get used by characters or that describe other things that can inform our hypotheses here. So,
mm-hmm. Well, and they know that we've had questions, but the clarification is sort of, okay, you've had questions. Those are good questions. Maybe you should be asking these questions. They are kind of clarifying redirection, right? They're narrowing down all of those questions and to kind of lead us to either come to the solution or lead us astray, either or.
Yeah. And, one other thing that I want to touch on for just a second is the title, which is Hen in the Wolf House. I meant to mention this back when we were talking about Bobby Morse and me understanding that she probably was a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent as well. I think the initial – for someone like you that may not have – seen that dynamic going on because you didn't have the background, Hen in the Wolf House could be easily describing Simmons, correct?
Right. That's what I assumed, that the hen, the good guy, and the wolf house, like the bad guys, like it's Simmons. This is, an episode about a mole. Simmons is that mole. We know that already. That's
right.
The episode.
Plans and obviously this is a mixed up version of the phrase wolf in the hen house or fox in the hen house or
right.
Wolf in sheep's clothing or things like that, where, it's a predator among the prey. And in this one, it's the prey kind of being in the den of evil here. So I also obviously saw this as Bobby Morse as being a hen in the wolf house because she was introduced in this episode. So there's that level. But I even took it to another level after watching it with Reyna. Because she has put herself, basically she's in two separate wolf houses. She's playing with Hydra, which is a very dangerous thing because Daniel Whitehall wants to kill her now.
Right.
But she's also dealing with Sky's father, who is equally as dangerous. He's like, who has put this fear into you? And he's like, why aren't you still afraid of me? Like, basically he's using fear to control her. So, maybe her special power is that she lays eggs or something. I don't know.
I don't think that. Who knows? That's a stretch. That's a stretch. Sir. But there were some funny stuff though in this episode. I have to say one of those things, if you're watching real closely and picking up on stuff that, I found to be pretty funny, especially Simmons at the beginning, kind of an off, shouldn't even be like conversation that you're supposed to be listening to, right? Like the I forget who her lab partner is. The
Kenneth.
Yeah, right. And he's like,
which we thought was never going. He was never going to show up again. But
right,
here
he's a throwaway character, whatever. And she's like, "What kind of hell cow made Carmine milk or whatever?"
Right.
and then he's like, "It just says the name is Bessie."
Which is awesome because, yeah, of course, in the Marvel Universe, there is actually a character called Hellcow,
yeah,
a.k.a. Bessie. She was bitten by Dracula way back when. Dracula is part of the Marvel Universe, or an incarnation of Dracula is part of the Marvel Universe. And she shows up in the kind of the funnier Marvel comics like Howard the Duck or Deadpool.
Mm-hmm.
But she made her first appearance in Giant Size Man Thing number 5 from 1975. And
random.
Yeah, I just, you know, I was when I hear stuff like that, it makes me feel good that the writers are putting just those little extra nuggets in there again to please fans that are paying close attention.
Right.
Now I don't know what this has to do with anything. So there's a few other references here, but I wrote this down that the restaurant that Raina asks Coulson to meet her at is called La Comtesse Furieuse, which means the Furious Countess.
Right.
Which I'm trying to read into that, but I'm not sure that means anything other than just the restaurant they shot at or
And doubtful. I mean, I'm sure they redressed it, but you know, looking at your notes, I was like, what does that even mean? You know, it may mean nothing. It could be something inside joke amongst just the crew. It could be like, you know, Indiana Jones hanging out at the Club Obi-Wan.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
Just a fun reference. No, you know, no, don't look any further. I don't know. It's
right.
Interesting.
And talking to some of my friends and coworkers about this, some people are saying that I take some of these a little far, that they might be a stretch. This is not one of those cases. The Hydra founder and the Tesseract are name checked here by Daniel Whitehall, obviously referring to the Red Skull as the founder of Hydra and his Tesseract. And so Daniel Whitehall is obviously looking for his thing, which is this obelisk, which you know, maybe once, like, now we can start getting some information as to why Daniel Whitehall is still the same age as he was from 1945. So.
Yeah, that is a big question. My guess too is, let's introduce a bad guy that we can carry forward into Agent Carter.
Mm.
You know, so here's a familiar face that we're used to. Here's a bad guy. We know he's a bad guy. We know about him. Now let's find out in Agent Carter how he's able to stay this young.
That's a good point. I didn't think about them actually putting that into the Agent Carter plot, that we would find out how he's able to survive without, you know, without aging, apparently.
I feel like that's a last episode thing where it's like Agent Carter. This is just me making crap up. But, like, you know, they think they've destroyed him. But through some sort of thing, he is able to either be frozen or, you know, kind of the Captain America thing. You know, what happens to him? You know, to kind of explain it. I don't think it'd be a major plot point, but
he steps through a rift in time or something.
Yes, maybe. Exactly. Exactly. Well, you have to point out the something that I was like, oh, I've got to write this in the notes. And I was like, actually, I already got this. You know, obviously, Adrian Palicki was going to be playing Wonder Woman on a ABC show that didn't, you know, the pilot was made, never got done.
We got
a great nod in this episode.
Yes. Yeah. So this is the one that I'm talking to some people at work about. And they're like, that may be a stretch, but
no.
She was supposed to play Wonder Woman. She and Simmons jump off the roof and land on an invisible jet. And what does Wonder Woman drive?
An invisible jet. I feel like they could have done it where, I mean, granted, they want us to see them jump off and like, oh no, what's going to happen?
Exactly.
You know, type of a thing, you know, but, the fact that the ship was cloaked, you know, the Quinjet, you know, is invisible. She's Wonder Woman. The writers know that we know that she was going to be Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
They know that even though the show never was on TV, we know that she was Wonder Woman. You know, she's – yeah, that I don't think is a stretch. I think that was intentional.
I think for people that didn't really know that, I think they're telling me it's a stretch. But I think for all of us fans that knew that, it's like, it seems very obvious.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and purposeful.
Exactly. So. It was, you know, it wasn't going to be as obvious. You know, they weren't going to, the writers weren't going to have Simmons say like, how did you know that jet was there? It was invisible. You know, they weren't going to write something in like that, but it was, that was on purpose.
Yeah. And then, Sky name checks Ron Burgundy with Hunter, which is great. Cause I think basically every episode this season, so five episodes now with him, he's drinking in every one.
Yeah.
He's always having a beer, or what was he drinking, like brandy or something in this one. So,
And then he throws out that we should make, a three olive martini, cold the olives.
Oh, yep. Yeah. Oh, no, that was Mac and Bobby Morse talking about that.
Oh,
that they could have
that's
a
right.
three olive, or a, yeah, a three
that's
olive
right.
martini.
That's right.
Because he was so happy to see her, and then Hunter, like, they're all happy and stuff, and Hunter comes
that's
in,
right.
and he,
that's right.
and she's like, hey, nice suit. And he's like, this is my normal speaking voice when people upset me.
Yes. This is not a tone.
This is great. This is a really fun episode. And Chris, I'm glad you could join me on the episode this week in the absence of our normal host. So.
It was my pleasure. I'm sure, you know, whatever Director Stolte is up to in the field, that he will make it out just fine.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get a debrief from him on next week's episode. But in the meantime, that's all we've got for this week's episode of Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files.
If you enjoy this episode, please make sure to leave feedback on iTunes. You can also contact us by emailing shield@randomchatter.com. Follow us on Twitter. It's at Agents Podcast. Facebook page is located at facebook.com/agentspodcast.
And you can also check out the other shows that Josh and I do, which are Green Justice, an Arrow podcast, and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast, both available at randomchatter.com. All those shows and this one are also available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS.
And you can listen to more of me and the stuff that I like to talk about, like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the world of comic books, movies, the latest and what's going on in gadgets and whatnot, over at my podcast, which is called S'more Geeks. It's available at smoregeeks.com and, of course, also on iTunes and Stitcher.
And if you enjoy this podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. So for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, this is Jay.
And this is Chris.
Signing off from Level 7. This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.